The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Booker Tov, Howard, I think you're in good company about being a little afraid of the Sputnik vaccine. I think if it was called, like, you know, peaches and cream vaccine or something
would you
like
call
that, people
it
might
Sputnik?
Be more inclined.
Why Sputnik? That was not a success story, was it?
I don't know. I think that the name probably has a slightly different connotation when you're in Russia and you understand the Russian culture a little bit better. You might be more inclined to take it. But a story which is not necessarily a lot better. Yesterday I said that I wasn't necessarily expecting our Corona cabinet to decide today, yesterday, which is when they were supposed to have met, to decide yesterday what they're going to be doing about the reopening. I thought that they might meet and not come to a conclusion. Well, they didn't even meet yesterday,
why?
Even though the meeting had been set down. No reason has officially been given as to why the meeting didn't take place. But inevitably with these meetings, whoever has the power to call the meeting also has the power to call off the meeting. And if they think that things at the meeting are not going to go quite in the direction that they'd hoped, then there is often a tactic used just to delay or to call off in the hope that something may happen in the interim, which could change the minds of those people who would oppose the position that they're taking. That's the only speculation that I can offer, because no reason has been given at all. So the current situation is that we're still heading to an opening up on Friday morning, tomorrow morning, with the airport reopening on Sunday in the absence of a different decision. And I just wonder whether there'll be a meeting today in an attempt to try somehow to delay the reopening tomorrow. There has been talk about the fact that reopening over the weekend is not a good idea. People like to move around a lot over the weekend, and that there might be it might just be better to try to open at the beginning of next week and give a little bit more chance for people to get vaccinated at the same time. Another proposal has been made that teachers who are not vaccinated should not be allowed to teach. And the health ministry seems to be quite strongly in favor of that point of view. We understand that at the moment about 53% of Israel's teachers have had at least one vaccination, so there's obviously a lot of work still to be done to get the rest of the teacher population vaccinated. The teachers union has said it's illegal to ban people from teaching if they haven't been vaccinated. We're back to the problem that we could see coming from some distance, which is, to what extent
Absolutely.
Is the government entitled to enforce people to be vaccinated, or alternatively not to enforce the vaccination, but to potentially put sanctions on those who choose not to be vaccinated or just not vaccinated for whatever reason, to actually sanction them. In the case of the teachers, that would effectively mean they can't go to school, and I'm guessing they probably won't be paid as a result of that.
Yeah, look, I don't see anything wrong with that personally. If a teacher says it's my right to smoke, well, it absolutely is, but it's not your right to smoke in a classroom when the kid's there, and you could impact on somebody's health in the classroom. So it's your choice. You can either not smoke in the classroom, or you can not teach. I don't think that's unreasonable. I know that many of my listeners disagree, and I would like them to continue doing so. If they do, 34519 or 061-895-1019. Tell me why I'm wrong. But to me, it's the same as smoking in a classroom. It's your right to smoke, but it's not your right to smoke and impact on potentially on the health of those around you.
I hear your point of view. I think there's going to be quite a strong legal challenge to this situation, this position that the health ministry is taking. Obviously, it hasn't yet been decided. It's all in the proposal stage. I think that it is required for teachers and indeed students of whatever age possible to be vaccinated. What we have seen, major outbreaks of COVID-19 in the school system, with people infecting one another in the classroom situation. It's almost impossible to maintain social distancing in the classroom while still continue to conduct semblance of normality in the classroom. So unfortunately, we've seen a lot of outbreaks in that particular area, and I can understand where the health ministry would come from. It's going to be an interesting discussion for sure.
Absolutely. I wish we were at that level that we could have that discussion here in South Africa. Israel has been accused of attacking targets in Syria last night, Groundhog Day.
Yeah, deja vu, I was going to say, but yeah, Groundhog Day all the same. This really comes on the back of two aeroplanes, two cargo aircraft that were tracked moving from Iran to Syria, to Damascus, were tracked apparently carrying weapons, carrying arms equipment for the use of Hezbollah and of the use of the Syrian forces. We understand that these aircraft were actually associated with the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. This is what the intelligence is telling us. Lo and behold, this attack that took place in southern Syria last night in the Damascus area as well. Sirens were apparently heard, and the Syrian news agency did report that there was an attack. They spoke about surface-to-surface missiles being used to try to attack targets in Syria. They also went on to say that there were anti-missile systems deployed. Most of the missiles, we were told, the incoming missiles, were intercepted. Very, very little damage was done, according to the report by the Syrian news agency. Of course, there's nothing official from Israel, but, I mean, there have been so many different attacks in different parts of Syria, even over the course of the last week or two. I think five attacks just over the course of the last week or so. One assumes, without necessarily having any confirmation, that Israel must have been involved in somehow trying to oppose the movement of the arms and ammunition that have come from the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, which are being shipped into Syria at some alarming rate. I mean, it seems as if, though, they are unabated, these attacks that are carried out against these arms shipments, which are clearly being tracked. I mean, by now, if the Iranian Revolutionary Guard hasn't worked it out, it's obvious probably to all concerned that Israel is able to somehow track the intelligence and the movements of these arms shipments, but they are undeterred. They are intent upon
What we don't know is what Israel doesn't know. You know, we don't know if anything gets through. That could be why they're continuing, which does worry me. Where's Russia in all of this? Because didn't they force this agreement in Syria with Iran that there would be no amassing of arms on the southern part of Syria?
So Russia is very, very silent. We don't see a great deal of Russian presence right now in that southern Syrian area. We did see a very, very strong Russian presence for an extended period of time. But at the moment, Russia is very silent. We don't see Russian aircraft. We don't hear about Russian personnel on the ground. So Russia, and also at the diplomatic level, when there are comments to be made in the international community about things going on in Iran, about things going on in southern Syria, then the Russian administration seems to be extremely silent on this issue. And it's not clear why that's the case and whether, you know, Russia has some sort of something else going on, which we're not aware of. I do agree with you that the fact that the Iranians seem to be insistent upon trying their luck every time, in spite of Israeli, intelligence clearly tracking at least some of the arms shipments and actually firing missiles against it in order to try to physically prevent them from moving the arms, does signal that potentially some of them are getting through, that they are succeeding to some degree, and that, you know, if they insist upon 100 shipments, then even if their success rate is only 2%, then at least two of them will get through, but they have to put the 100 shipments in the air and move them in order to get the two through that they want to get through. And that may well be the tactic that they're prepared to continue. Give up on some of those which Israel is able to track and to attack. The other little story in that part of the world is the fact that Israel seems to have lost a number of drones in recent days, some of them being shot down apparently over Lebanon, one drone reported to have been shot down over Gaza. And so this is being considered, at least in the international community, to be something of a failure story for Israeli drone technology, given that the drones seem to be quite easily shot down, or at least three drones that we're aware of having recently been lost. And so the question arises as to what risk this places Israel at. And I think we need to just put the whole drone thing into some context. The reason why Israel is using drones is in order not to risk manpower. That's what a drone is all about. Mm. So one has to assume that a drone is being sent into a place which is dangerous, because otherwise they would send humans in there. If it was a safe thing to do, they would send human personnel in to do that job, and they wouldn't need the drones to do it. But the fact that they're getting drones to do it means that there's some element of risk concerned. And so one has to understand that if it wasn't these drones that were being lost, potentially we would be losing manpower. So the fact that it's a drone that's being lost rather than a human is some success story, I think, in my view, that signals a success story and a good use of technology. The other question that arises is to whether the loss of a drone actually means that Israel is exposing itself to those people who find the drone and who could potentially look at the information or read the information and get some sort of idea as to what Israel is up to. And there has been a report which suggests that getting hold of a drone does expose to some degree what's happening within the drone, because the minimum that you can detect from actually having the drone in your possession is you can detect where it took off from, you can detect its flight path that was used, you can see exactly what the drone operator was trying to concentrate on. And so there is some information. Of course, you know the physical makeup, what the physical hardware of the drone is, which could potentially give you a leg up in terms of shooting down future drones, because you've got some sort of an idea as to what the drone's capability is. So there is a lot of interesting discussion around the use of drones and whether the loss of a drone constitutes a failure or a success. But Israel is really using massive amounts of drone technology for intelligence and indeed for other purposes, different sizes and different types of drones. So the fact that we might have lost a few drones over the last few days, I think, is probably just a drop in the ocean in comparison to what's really going on out there.
Really, really interesting. Another subject, a little bit off, moving away from the usual, is the Bank of Israel has criticized Israel's commercial banks for not passing on more mortgage benefits to the end consumer. Tell us about the story. What benefits have been given that aren't being passed on?
The way that mortgages are constructed in Israel is that someone who buys a property, buys a house, whatever they choose to buy, can go along to a bank and they can construct a certain mortgage package which has a mix of fixed rate interest and variable interest. So you can do it according to your needs, according to your personal circumstances, and you can construct that package. What's been the case up until now is that the variable interest rate has been limited to only one third of the mortgage package. That's been by the order of the Bank of Israel to the mortgage bank, saying don't allow any consumer to have more than one third of their mortgage on a variable rate, because obviously a variable rate has a certain level of risk concern. The rate may increase very suddenly and people may find themselves unable to make mortgage repayments. So that's been some sort of a protection for the consumer. However, under the current circumstances, the variable rate is much lower than the fixed rate. And that's because the fixed rate is usually put together in order to take into account where the interest rate may go over the mortgage period, which is traditionally 10, 15, 20, even 25 years. So over that period of time, there is an expectation that the variable rate will increase. And so the fixed rate that's put together that's supposed to cover that entire period has to reflect the fact that the interest rate is likely to increase over a certain period of time. So as things stand right now, the variable rate is lower than the fixed rate. And the Bank of Israel has said, we are going to release that one third cap and we're going to increase it to two thirds so that people at the current time can put their mortgage package together in a way that will allow them to pay a little less because the interest that they pay on their mortgage is less. Of course, what's happened is it seems as if the mortgage banks have not necessarily communicated that to their customers, to those people with mortgages, and so that has not been passed on. And the Bank of Israel has come out being very, very critical of these mortgage banks, saying that they should really do more to pass on this benefit that the Bank of Israel has seen fit to implement to the end consumer.
really very, very interesting. And these conversations are very important because it does keep everybody just a little bit honest. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Fascinating conversations and a great week of discussions around Israel's news and current events. We'll catch you on Monday morning. I hope you have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and a healthy, blessed weekend.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.